Okay, you're back, and welcome back. Melinda Leslie has been public with her own abduction experiences for 20 years. She's researched covert ops involvement in abductions for 18 years, interviewed more than 50 abductees with this involvement. We'll be talking to one next hour. For 9 years, Melinda was the director of a UFO lecture series hosting the most prominent names in ufology. In addition to her abduction work, Melinda has been a paranormal researcher for a number of years and a founding member of the Orange County Paranormal Researchers, which is a group that has conducted formal investigations for a number of years as well. She's back on Coast to Coast. Melinda, how are you?
Hi, George. Thanks for having me back.
Are you wet out there in the hinterlands?
Oh, boy. I think you're not far from me.
No, not at all. It doesn't stop.
I'm sitting by a window, and it was just hitting the window recently because the wind must have just blowing it straight in that direction.
This is the fourth wave now. It's come, and they're expecting more rain on Friday.
Well, I need to find out who's building the ark and find out where they are.
We're all going. Producer Tom will pick you, and off we all go.
Oh, very good, very good.
What's new with you since we last talked last August?
So much going on in my research, so much new stuff. I also wanted to say congratulations on your anniversary with the program.
Ah, you're welcome. Thank you.
Thank you very much. You're welcome. You earn all the accolades you get. You do such a fantastic job since you've taken it over, and I'm thrilled to be a part.
All in a day's work, Melinda. All in a day's work. But you know, one of the great benefits of this program is to talk to people like you who have not only experienced some of these very strange things, but have had the opportunity to go out and investigate them, as you have been doing, right?
Yes. And doing so much of that, interviewing people, really compelling cases like that of Niara Eisley, who we'll have on later, and just an amazing case. In fact, that's one of the new things that's come up in my research. It existed before, but I never looked at it as a separate thing, which is this idea of Niara has a background of being in the military and being involved with ET technology projects while in the military, and then also had the covert ops military reabduction kind of stuff that I investigate while in the military. And so I have these cases that I call military on military. These are abductees who have joined the military and, just as anybody would,
sure,
regular military careers. And then have the same kind of covert stuff happens that in my other cases of this do, harassment, surveillance, and reabduction, et cetera, but that it happens to them or it may start with an experience that happens while in the military. And then some of these people also then, besides having what I call the reabduction experience, in other words, they're in the military, but then they have this other thing that matches the rest of my cases. But then sometimes also these people are recruited into some kind of program dealing with the technology, or if they had some peripheral involvement in dealing with the technology, they're then recruited into a deeper covert level. And, I mean, Niara herself had 3 months of missing time in this experience, in her first time experience with it. I have another case of a gentleman, I'm sure he won't mind my saying at least his first name. His name's Ray. And
I know Ray. No, I
don't. You probably know a couple. But he's this very interesting case. I certainly hope he's listening tonight. I sent him an email. He, while in the military, had an experience, and this is just mind-boggling, but he had this happen where he, my understanding is I believe he was on an aircraft carrier witness a UFO-related event. I have another case that had that same thing happen, by the way, but that's a separate case. But in his case, he then, after his debriefing process, was approached by some guys in suits and said, would you like to be a part of a program? We have a special thing. And if you sign this paperwork we have, prepared for you here, it'll begin right away. And they told him, the stipulations and what would be involved, but they said you'd have an increase in pay and all this stuff, but no one can know. And, but it sounded very exciting. And he was single and young, and, so he seized the opportunity for what might lead to advancement and stuff.
Sure, and it also sounds patriotic to them,
exactly,
doesn't it?
Exactly, and to be part of something exciting, and he wanted to get into special ops, so that kind of thing. And so he signed this paperwork. And next thing he knows, and I believe there may have then an injection or something, an association shortly after something. But next thing he knew is he was coming out of kind of an altered state, if I'm remembering correctly,
okay,
in his parents' home. And it was 2 years later.
He lost two years of time?
2 years of missing time. Now, his parents and his family, and he said, how did I get here? And they basically said, don't you remember, like 4 days ago, we picked you up at the airport.
Unbelievable.
And his family thought he was off on a mission, because apparently he had called home on, like, major holidays only a couple times, literally like two or three times a year.
They erased his memory.
And he didn't even remember calling home. And his parents said he was very vague. Now, I haven't talked to them. I'm taking his word for it. But apparently his parents said when he would call home, and his family and his siblings and stuff, said if he would call on a major holiday, he was very vague. He said, I'm on an operation. It's top secret. I can't talk about it. You know, but he doesn't even remember calling them. I mean, he literally had 2 years of missing time.
Now, are all these people abducted, and do they all think they've been abducted by aliens?
Yes, yes. Okay. I mean, that's what I focus on with my
All right,
my
so that's research. The
and
common
I'm glad
denominator.
You asked that. I'm really glad you asked it, because it's really, really important to clarify this for the researchers, and I mean for the listeners.
And many of them are researchers.
Yeah, yeah. So. Well, exactly, and I meant for the researchers too, but I meant the listeners. Freudian. But that's just it. So many people misconstrue this as to suggest that this kind of research that I do and that these cases are somehow supplementing the alien abduction experience. A lot of people think, oh, it's military and not aliens. And in my research, the cases I have, the qualification number one is that you're an alien abductee, you know, and that you have a bunch of experiences with that. Like Joe Mentaldo is quick to call these abductees, these are advanced abductees. Not that they're better in any way, but these are people with a deeper level of the alien abduction story.
Sure. And maybe it's longer running for them.
Yeah, exactly. It's gone throughout their life. They've had in-depth experiences. They've had all the experiences you usually hear reported, but also more in-depth, you know, and they have a huge amount of involvement with the alien experience. And then these individuals then somehow, and I can get into that later, but there's different ways in which these covert ops and military types may know that someone is an alien abductee, and I can get into that. But they're somehow then monitored, and I believe it starts off with the monitoring and surveillance in most cases, and then we'll go to the stage of actually being re-abducted, interrogated, having followed up procedures. But some people just have the low-grade harassment and surveillance, and it never goes beyond that. And I think I've come in my research to kind of figure out that they're looking into those people. They're looking to see, is this a case? Is this someone we might be interested in? So there's this low-grade harassment, surveillance stuff, and then you might not have anything else because they deem that, you know, whatever, for thank God they're not interested in your case, you know, or something. And you may not have more, or it may come later. So, you know, when I get a case that starts to have the low-grade stuff, I say keep me posted because the other may be coming. It may never come, or it might. But, you know, usually one thing leads to another. And once someone gets far enough along, I now, you know, I'm often find myself telling people, this might happen.
Well, you know, I'm interested to find out how these covert ops folks know these people have been abducted. We'll talk about that when we come back, Melinda. Also, the folks from the History Channel were here all night taping one of their ancient astronaut series. I guess they're doing five total. They've already done one. So this is very important on their agenda as well. We'll be back in a moment. And welcome back. We're with Melinda Leslie. Melinda, how do these covert ops folks know who these alien abductees are and approach them?
Well, a couple different possible ways, and I'll tell you how I figured that out in just a second.
All right.
But I do want to, again, just emphasize how these experiences are happening because the person is an alien abductee, and therefore I think this covert involvement is some of the greatest, if not the strongest, evidence in support of the fact that alien abduction not only happens to these people, it's a very real phenomena. It's happening to such – I heard Roger at the end of your program last night.
Roger Lehrer,
sure. Roger Lehrer doing the surgical removal. Great interview. And in that program, he mentioned 15% of the population. Well, you know, even if you say more conservatively, 10% of the world's population possibly being abductees. And I was so glad to hear him say that on the air. And I think a lot of researchers in this field need to repeat that so people understand the numbers of people. If the world's population is, what, 6 billion, roughly 6,800,000?
Yeah, right around there. So you're talking about over,
that means close to 700 million if you take it at 10%. If you take it to 15%,
well,
I'm going to say the B word. Heaven forbid it's going to cause all this, you know, ruckus out there in ufology, but a billion people.
Well, take it down. Take it down to 5%. You're still talking 300-plus million people.
Exactly. Exactly. Thank you. You totally got the point. And then that many people having abductions, of course, that many people experiencing anything is going to be of an interest to the governments of the world, to the intelligence agencies of the world, to the security and, you know, threat systems of the world. And so it makes complete sense that these guys would have an interest in some of these cases.
It tells me two things, Melinda. One, it tells me government can't stop it.
Yes.
And it tells me they desperately don't know about it. They want to know what's going on.
Yes, or that they know about it, certainly, but because they can't stop it, they want to know.
They want to know what happened.
And then, of course, one of the driving factors, and I've said this from day one about the people having these experiences, it gets down to the questions that people are being asked in the interrogations and such. What is it that these government covert ops military guys are looking for? And the bottom line is usually about the technology, that they're wanting to back engineer and develop the technology. And granted, there's other things too, but that one thing is consistently always there.
Okay, Ben, back to the question.
Yes.
How do they know who they are?
Okay, well, at first, when I first started doing the research years ago, and so this still applies, because I originally thought, could it be just that this is only happening to the people who have gone public with their experiences? You know, whether they've done radio interviews, written a book, spoke at conferences, whatever. And those were the first couple of cases I was meeting were people who were public and talking about the fact that this was also going on. And I had started to go public at about the time it started to happen for me. So that was an easy assumption. But over time, I've come to work with cases who have never gone public, who have never even told family members and yet have the military involvement stuff. So that kind of threw the, you know, this is only happening to people who've gone public idea out the window. And so I started to go, well, okay, you know, certainly if you've gone public, that's one way they would know. And then I started to look at other patterns I was getting. And I realized that some of these people, if they start to approach a researcher, they're talking about it on the phone. One of the first kinds of forms of harassment surveillance that happens to people is the phone stuff. So I think they're possibly monitoring for discussions about this on the phone. And then I also learned of things like the DSP spy satellite, the research of Ron Reger, who worked on the information recovery for that. And I believe you've actually had him on the show. And Ron, in his research about his involvement in that, said that the spy satellites that are up, and in the case of the DSP, it was built for another purpose, but it just happened to pick up these things that the government calls, or the military calls, fast walkers,
mm-hmm.
which are these craft under intelligent control, apparently coming in from deep space and coming into our atmosphere, and that our satellites sometimes catch these, or at least the satellites with the equipment on them. Well, then I extrapolated and spoke to Ron about this possibility, and he said, sure, it's highly likely that if they were having a bunch of the satellites many years ago starting to catch these things, then at some point they developed satellites and technology that's up there monitoring made just to do this. And then, of course, between the space shuttle missions and all the stuff that's coming on the space shuttle missions, Jaime Musan gives an incredible presentation with so much of the footage and stuff from these missions. I mean, other people, too. There's been a number of documentaries and everything about that. But so I'm starting to go, okay, space shuttle missions are catching them, satellites are catching them. It's safe to then assume that they would have technology up there specifically to do it. I think they're monitoring what's coming and going a lot better than anyone's given them credit. And thus, I think they may monitor if there's activity in a particular area, if that activity is repetitive, then they could monitor the phones in the area. They could, you know, I'm just thinking there's many ways that they might know and that someone's having this experience. So I think they're monitoring the movement of unusual crafts and stuff much, much better than anyone gives them credit for.
I think so, too.
And then the other thing that's new in my research is realizing that while abductions, alien abduction is often generational, now not in every case by any means, but some abductees are fortunate enough to have discussions with family members, that the family members are open to this, and many abductees with children have then that their children are also then abducted. And that's very frightening and very hard for those families and for abductees who then realize this happens to their children.
And there's just nothing they can do about it.
Yeah, yeah. It's a very difficult thing. And then many abductees, so you have children who realize their parents are having this happen, parents who realize their children are having it happen. And then many abductees then realize that, like I said, that their parents, so if you're an adult abductee, you might realize your parent. And in some cases, even grandparents have this happen. So this is multi-generational. Actually, I know of a case one researcher has that she just recently told me about where this goes back five generations in the family. And they have a family Bible from the 1800s where a great-grandmother wrote in blank pages of this old antique family Bible that's been passed through the family from back in the 1800s of two experiences. And she was writing that one was angelic. It's what she was saying, and then one was demonic. But I haven't read these, but I'm trusting this other researcher. Apparently, when you read these descriptions, it's very clear she's talking about classic abduction-related stuff. And she was just labeling it. Oh, this is, one of them involved a tall blonde, that whole thing, a Nordic type.
Yeah.
And one involved grays, and the grays was very frightening. And it was, she said they took her from her room out a picture hanging up over the bed, and this piece of artwork, the beings took her through that. In other words, through the wall. Yeah, there was a piece of artwork there, but they went through the wall, And so it's like, again, I haven't read the description, but from what I've been told, this is going back in the 1800s that somebody had this happen. And we're finding these kind of multi-generational cases more and more. Well, what I started to find is that the people with these military experiences, I have a few cases, not a lot, but I do have a few where this is also multi-generational. And so not only with the technology could they know, not only would they know if someone's gone public and et cetera, but they also might know you're an abductee because they knew it went back in your family.
Hmm.
And that's a brand new development, this fact that
so they're following the family members of those that may have been abducted.
Well, if your parents or grandparents had the military harassment surveillance because they were being abducted, then it makes because believe me, that's another thing. These covert ops guys know a lot more about this subject than we do as researchers, or at least as much.
But well, they've been at it for a long time.
Yeah, exactly, and have become very good at the mind control they do, the manipulation, their ability to cover it up. It's really quite a big deal on that end. And so for them to know, they knew this was multi-generational before we did, in other words. So they knew that if they had someone back in the 40s, 50s, then if that person had kids, then there was a pretty good chance that they were going to monitor to see if those kids ended up being alien abductions. And then of course, those kids are then going to, have the experience as well. And I suspect, since I'm already starting to get cases of the multi-generational quality to this subject with the military involvement, I suspect I'm going to get more cases of that.
How much intimidation is going on?
Oh, it's immense. I used to also think originally that this all happened because it was about intimidating the abductee, getting them not to talk. I thought originally that was the driving factor. Now I've come to realize that's not it at all. That's like a byproduct. That yes, they want to cover up what they're doing. They're pardon my language, but covering their ass. So they're covering what they're doing, And so to the intimidation is part of the mind control process. It's a part of the deprogramming. It's a part of their covering up what they're doing. And if they do this when you're in a drug or altered state or using a lot of fear and pain, these techniques work. They've been proven by the government for a long time and stuff that these techniques work. And you're left with the abductee having real second thoughts about coming public with this part of their experience.
Their
whole alien abduction, period. I mean, when they threaten, when you have a MyLab experience, it's not just don't talk about the fact we were with you. It's about don't talk about the alien stuff at all.
And what kind of threats, though?
Well,
threats of death?
Yes, exactly.
Wow.
For instance, I can give one example that hits really close to home.
Yeah, go ahead.
Is I kind of had I call her an ex-co-author, right? A dear friend and I were doing some of this research. Well, years ago I learned of, someone else doing this research. I'm not in a vacuum out there. There's other people doing this. and at the time she had her own experiences with it, like myself, and started to then look into, other people. And she had ran a couple of support groups in the Vegas area. And we started doing this together. Well, for instance, she started to have experiences, and there was actually one experience where her and I were taken together. And we were separated and each, interrogated separately. But in her experience, she was made to believe that if she pursued this subject, they would kill her children. And she had had a previous experience. She had had another experience where they had told her she had two grown sons, and one of them had a family. They had told her in that experience, we know where your sons live and their family. We know where they go to work. They gave her a complete breakdown in other words, they had been monitoring their daily activities.
It's the old "we know where you live" line, right?
Yeah, and then in this additional experience, she was then told, we know where they are at any moment, and if you continue with this, they're all going to be dead. And abductees get told this a lot. I know another abductee. This is a heartbreaking story. She had a Down syndrome child, okay?
Yes.
And she's a wonderful case, lifelong abduction, like Joe Mantal would say, an advanced abductee. She has this, Down syndrome child that is now an adult for the most part. And they told her, if you pursue this, we will take away your child, I can't even imagine, and there, the threat was, so people have been threatened to have their children taken away or killed, or have had. I had a child who had this experience, who said, and this was again really heartbreaking. They told the child, "We'll kill your parents."
Jeez.
Yeah.
Now, who are these co-op folks, Melinda? Are they part of our military? I think not. I would say that they were more of a black ops operation.
Exactly. It very much so, because it's definitely black ops, covert. I believe it's closely connected to the same teams and people that are involved in the crash retrievals, in the back engineering of the technology, the blue teams, as they say, it's that same group that's involved in this, and it has so much to do with the technology and all the aspects of the technology, that whole metaphysical aspect to the technology. There's a psi component, PSI.
Is this in this, because this is a worldwide phenomenon, mm-hmm. in terms of abductees, mm-hmm. is this covert abduction harassment, is that also worldwide, or is it just happening here?
Yes, it is. And this is not necessarily a new development. From the beginning, I was aware, I was hearing of some international cases, but this has increased for me. And for instance, there's a gentleman in England, Miles Johnston, a researcher, who's worked with a couple of cases in England. I already was familiar with some cases in England having this happen. I'm familiar with at least two cases in Russia. In Italy, the very interesting thing happened. I had a chance to have a sit-down conversation with Maurizio Biada, who now works with Open Minds. Maurizio, who had published the magazines in Italy and is now here publishing the magazine for Open Minds, he, in this conversation I had with him, told me when he was doing the magazines before, Helmut Lammer, who used to be a researcher doing the same subject, who's now pulled out of the field for career reasons, but at the time he interviewed him rather extensively and became very knowledgeable with the subject, so he started to kind of look into it in Italy, and he discovered that this was happening widely in Italy, that he was, and it totally, you know, we had this casual conversation about other things, and here he brings up that he was aware of this because of Helmut's research, and that he had researched and looked into multiple cases in Italy. Hmm. And he said in Italy what was interesting, what the government, you know, or human personnel that were involved, there was some Italian, that was expected, of course, a lot of American, that was expected, but he said a high number, which surprised him, and he wondered if I knew anything about it, and it's the first and only time I've heard this, a high number of French military. And I don't know why that would be, but he said a lot of them say there were French military. So these are Italian cases having it with French military. My English cases have clearly had it with English military and American military.
Do they seem to be picking it up at a much more rapid pace in terms of their covert work?
Yes, it does seem to be on the increase. The cases are getting more layered, more intense. Like I said, more of this military on military involvement, more training and stuff going on that seems to be picking up. And I think it's because of myself and a few other people kind of rising to the surface, talking about this subject more, that we also have more people approaching us with their cases. So it's hard to relate, where we just hearing about more cases or actually, is it actually on the increase? But when I have existing cases that have additional stuff happen, then I can say, okay, I think it's on the increase. And so, yes, and it seems to be more and more cases all the time.
And you're dealing primarily with the people who have been approached by these covert folks or all kinds of people who have been abducted? What's your experience?
Well, all kinds of people who have been abducted. Many, you know, I've been very fortunate to sit down and do some extensive interviewing here and there of major abduction researchers, and I get different results from different ones. But I'll stick with some of the prime results. For instance, is one researcher who has about 700 or 800. Cases of abduction that he's worked with, said he had about 200 cases of his about 200 of those people had harassment surveillance of some type, mail tampering, being watched, being followed, phone interruptions, black helicopter, you know, some form of that. But he only figured, or MIB, maybe related stuff, but it was roughly approximately 200 people is what he thought he had. But as far as people who had actually been the re-abduction, where they're taken to the underground base and interrogated or have medical procedures, he thought only 12 people had.
Hmm.
And I think that's telling. I haven't done anything to look at pure statistics on this. There's not enough research going on. Joe Montalto and I, for instance, have talked about, what if we start gathering some statistics? I happen to know a gentleman by the name of Les Velez, who runs the OPUS organization, Organization for Paranormal Understanding and Support, who started up this new project for MUFON on abduction. And he's going to involve this research in that project. And I'm hoping we can start to really get some statistical numbers on how many people are having the low-grade stuff.
Dramatic, Melinda. When we come back, let's talk to an abductee along with you. Now, coming out after more than 14 years of silence, Niara Isley will speak about her experiences with military abduction trauma and her process of recovery. As an experiencer of extraterrestrial abduction contact from childhood through adulthood, and her very strange military lab-type experiences while in the Air Force, Niara has gained deep insights into the workings of our world and the roles that different groups of both humans and ETs might be playing. Here's Niara Isley on Coast to Coast. Niara, how are you?
I'm good, thanks.
Good to have you with us. Melinda, you're still with us.
Yes, I am.
Niara, tell us a little bit about your story, and why are you coming out after 14 years of silence?
Well, a little bit about my story. If anybody has seen the documentary Dreamland, mm-hmm. done by Bruce Burgess back in 96, you got a little piece of it there. Basically, to make a long story short, I discovered I had 3 months of missing time. A friend was asking me about my military time, and we started going through it chronologically, and suddenly from January to March of 1980 was pretty blank. I could tell you where I worked and what I did, but I didn't remember any of my coworkers. I didn't remember any day-to-day details whatsoever. And having a pretty sharp memory on a lot of other counts, I found that very disturbing. And I also had a wave of nausea when I realized that 3 months were missing. Then I had hypnosis with Bud Hopkins in 94, and some of this came tumbling out at that point.
Now, you were in the Air Force, right?
Yes, I was.
During this time period.
Mm-hmm.
And when did you, Nera, start to feel strange? You know, you had this missing time, mm-hmm. but, I mean, what was it like?
Well, there was kind of a precursor to that. After I got out of the Air Force, I was having heart palpitations, really nasty ones, where the heart would take off at a mad gallop and it would feel like somebody was choking me at the same time. I did manage to bring that under control without medication by doing yoga-type breathing, deep breathing, pranayama practices. And then another thing that happened was I had all this free-floating anxiety, and it got so bad I almost decided to take my own life age 33. So those were some of the precursors before I even discovered that there was missing time.
Now, Melinda, I want to ask you this.
Mm-hmm.
With cases like Niara, where they want to take their own life,
yes.
I mean, we're talking serious business here now, aren't we?
Well, the whole abduction subject is very, I can even just start with the alien abduction subject, is extremely difficult for the abductees to live with, to live their lives with. It has a tremendous impact on their whole life. They're afraid of losing their jobs, should someone learn. They're afraid of a loved one leaving them. I have cases, and so do other researchers, but I have specific cases that I've worked with of abductees who have gotten divorced over this, had their significant other leave them, have had their children taken away from them. I know of a particular case where someone had a messy divorce and they were trying to use this against them to take their children away. I know of a case where that was succeeded, and I know a case where luckily the abductee fought it they did not succeed. I know of another abductee who I've mentioned before on the program. You've had her on, Leah Haley.
Yes.
Leah Haley, she might not want me to say this, but at the risk, has had her children, her grown children, disown her and has lost contact with them because of her sticking with the subject. And unfortunately, this is often the case. And then, of course, it's compounded with the people who've had these covert ops things because a subject so difficult to already live with, you have another part added to that, and you're put through so much in the experience. I mean, not only are abductees put through so much in the abduction scenario, and not all experiences are traumatic by any means, but many of them are. But the trauma comes in not so much the experience, but having to live life with it. That's where the trauma is the feeling of isolation, being alone. There's no one I can talk to. Everybody's going to think I'm crazy. A lot of abductees end up having, you know, these I won't say emotional problems by any means. They're incredibly strong and
sure.
resilient individuals, but will have these emotional breakdowns. And unfortunately, there are abductees that have attempted suicide,
sure.
this kind of thing.
Well, and they turn to others who are interested in the field of ufology and abductees, I think, for that support group they
need. Exactly. It is so necessary. If you're an abductee who's having any difficulty coming to terms with your experiences, first off, without risking you know, they call it colorizing your experience and stuff, meet a researcher or a therapist. I mean, thank God, you know, Niara here met Bud Hopkins and was able to work with him. You know, there's so many people out there doing this work. There are a few networks that exist. There's Opus, as I said. There's Joe Montaldo's network. I know of people. Certainly there's Bud and Dave. And, you know, but anyways, you can connect up with different groups. Find out who's in your area.
Well, and they care. That's important.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's find out from Niara. Niara, you've got a bachelor's degree in social work, right, from California State University?
Yes, I do.
I mean, so, you know, not that I'm saying people who don't have a degree, you know, may not be as knowledgeable as you, because, you know, to me, I went through college, and you know what? The School of Hard Knocks taught me more.
Right.
So, you know, I want to put that in perspective. But what I'm trying to say is, you know, you're an educated person. You're not making things up. You don't have any reason to lie about this.
That's what I was going to say. When I had hypnosis with Bud Hopkins, little gray guys with big black eyes, I was ready for. I had never heard of military abduction type experiences. It was extremely disturbing.
I bet you wish it never would have happened to you.
Well, yes and no.
Now
that I've kind of embraced the healing process and have really, you know, I've really reclaimed my life.
Sure. And you've made some friends.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Very much so.
That's important. Now, did the military know that you had been abducted, and how did they know if they did?
Well, I have some ideas on that. I read Dan Sherman's book. I believe you've had him on Coast to Coast. Dan Sherman talked about being part of a intuitive communicator project, and he was communicating with ETs, and some of what he was monitoring was abductions. And he would get this scale of, you know, 1 to 10 on different aspects of the abduction that was very disturbing to him, because he thought, gosh, these are human beings that are being abducted, and then, you know, what's this rating that I'm giving mean? So he was actually part of a project where monitoring of abductees was going on while they were being abducted by ETs.
Jeez, what were you going to say, Melinda?
Oh, thank you. So sorry, I didn't want to interrupt necessarily, but I wanted to add, when I myself am familiar with at least 14 cases of this military involvement stuff, of which about 10 of those people I know and have interviewed, but there's about 4 other cases that I know of very well that I haven't interviewed extensively, but I'm familiar with, of which Dan Sherman is one. Here's someone who is an abductee, joins the military, gets taken into this process, as she said, to train and communicate with aliens. Ray, who I brought up earlier, was also used to communicate with aliens, and I'll let Niara get more into that. But in Dan's case, you know, here's someone who had that military on military experience, and to the point where not only did he have alien abduction first, he had re-abduction, but then he got brought into this program and actually, put in a position, within a program to fulfill that role. I just wanted to inject that he was one of the cases I was familiar with.
Niara, tell us what did the military expect from you? What did they want you to do?
Well, I was an AutoTrak radar operator. AutoTrak is a surface-to-air missile radar, anti-aircraft artillery type of radar, because it tracks an aircraft with a very tight, narrow beam that's like a targeting. It paints a target on the aircraft to shoot down, in theory.
Okay.
Out on the Nevada test site, we were training pilots to fly against radar. So that was my regular job. But what happened that I remembered under hypnosis with Bud Hopkins was that we were taken out in the middle of the night. I later found out in a subsequent hypnosis session that we were taken out at gunpoint from our motel rooms.
Gunpoint?
And we were taken out there in the middle of the night on the radar, and we were told we were going to track some special aircraft. And we tried to track them, and they couldn't be tracked. I mean, they would just appear one place, we might get a bit of a lock, and then they would just be someplace else. There's no way a mechanical servo mechanism can turn that fast.
I wouldn't call them conventional aircraft, would you?
No. Well, they said special aircraft.
Yeah.
And so then after we were done with the test, we were told to stand out on the deck of the radar van And we were on a crew of people where we'd been given fatigues to wear with no rank insignia and no name tags, no identifying marks of any kind. And we were forbidden in no uncertain terms to speak to each other beyond what was necessary to run the radar test.
Now, Melinda,
yes.
How often is this happening with other people in the military?
Well, like I said, at this point, I am aware of about 14 cases of people who had this happen while in the military.
But these are the 14 that have come forward, right?
Well yes. I mean, these are just ones I met or became aware of. It's like how I met Niara. It was actually last year's International UFO Congress in Laughlin, Nevada.
Yeah.
And her and I were not speaking or anything. We were attending there. And the producer of that conference, Bob Brown, who I know quite well, Bob said, I heard of this case. You've got to meet her. I want to talk to her. Someone says she's here. And when I talk to her, I want you there present. Well, that was a great opportunity because Bob set it up. He met up with he was friends with someone that was friends with Niara anyways, and he set this up. And Bob Brown and I sat in private and had a chance to interview Niara pretty extensively right then. And so we interviewed Niara, and at that point, Bob said, I've got to have both you guys come and talk about this at next year's Congress. So I met her at last year's Congress, and actually had heard of her case previously through someone else, but had never met her. In fact, had even somewhat forgotten the name, and I was so glad that opportunity happened, and I learned of her case. And then, as a result, Niara and I are now speaking at this year's International Congress, the last week of Laughlin, and there's a link on my website to the Congress. I tell people, check it out. It's this incredible, get a little plug in here real quick, but it's this incredible week-long conference that is like old home week. You don't need to go all week. You can go for just a day, a couple days. You can break it down to make it very inexpensive. But I really recommend if people can go the whole week that they do, just because the sense of family and camaraderie. And then Niara and I are presenting. We're presenting together, but each of us are speaking for an hour. I will cover my research and my new developments in depth, and Niara will cover her story in depth. So I hope that people will at least go to the website, UFOcongress.com.
Oh, yeah, that's always a great event. I have not been to one in a while, but it is a very great event indeed. Niara, well, do you think you are giving up any kind of or breaking any security oath because of all of this?
I don't remember signing any security oath about these experiences, but I will tell you that if I did, the things that were done to me were atrocious, and no one should have to maintain a security oath under that kind of abuse.
No, and when you're saying the abuse, you're talking the abuse from the covert folks or from the ETs?
From the covert folks.
Okay. Do you remember anything at all about the ET experience?
Oh, yeah, I remember a lot about my ET experiences. I've had, quite a bit of memory come back from my sessions on that.
How about the craft?
It was very, very strange.
Do you remember the craft?
We were on saucer-shaped craft. I remember more the inside than the outside. I don't really recall seeing the outside too much. But low-light conditions, kind of a sound that sounds similar to crystal balls in the background.
Yeah.
And the kind of a ringing sound. I remember that.
And the ETs, were they grays?
Yes. Uh-huh.
Okay. They all seem to be grays when it has to do with abductees. Once in a while, we'll hear stories that human-looking ETs are standing by, but grays are always there, aren't they?
Not necessarily. Granted, there's a large percent of grays. And even with the grays, there's a couple of different descriptions and differences. Some of them are more tan. Some of them are taller, look gaunt and old. Some of them are shorter and squattier. So even there, there's quite a variety of that scene. But a lot of people have what are the reptilian experiences. Certainly the what's considered Nordic-looking, human-looking, but not quite human. Obviously, hybrids. A lot of people see what appears to be a human and gray combination, or a human reptilian combination or reptilian gray combination. A lot of people see insectoid types that...
Like the praying mantis
well,
types,
yes,
right?
Like yeah. a praying mantis, and they can be a cross between a gray and that.
Those would be weird to me if I saw
one. Oh, yeah.
I actually,
not to get into detail, but one of my own abduction experiences involved, I was... story, but I was taken from a conference, and a couple people at the support group at this conference ended up coming out and realizing that something had happened two nights before that particular group, but that something had happened where a number of us had been taken together while attending that conference. But what some of the people remembered seeing, besides a kind of a variety of grays, are some insectoid types, and that's the only time in my own experience that I saw this insectoid type, but I'll never forget. It had antennas somewhat, kind of not real large, but these antennas that stuck up that looked like moth antenna, like a feather.
Yeah.
Moth antennas look like feathers, like that. And I was just transfixed on how strange that was, and I had not heard of that before at that time. Since then, I have heard of other people seeing those feather-like antennas. But regardless, there's a variety of types of aliens seen. Now, in these military experiences, some people are seeing aliens with the military, and granted, occasionally it's various types. Very rarely, though, it is predominantly the grays that are seen with the military. At least with there are some reptilians seen with the military, but again, fairly rare. It is still predominantly if aliens are seen with them, it's grays.
Well, you know, the grays are the ones reported at Roswell. They seem to be all over the place. Of course, we don't know if they're biological. We don't know if they're just robots or cyborgs. Who knows what they are, Melinda?
Exactly. And the truth is we don't. I mean, everybody can speculate, but we don't know for sure. And some abductees feel like they're given information in regards to that. But it's been learned, it's been known in ufology, in at least in abduction research for a long time, that information can't really be trusted. Just because an alien tells you doesn't make it fact. It's just like even in the military experiences, whatever you hear or experience there, your memory may be true, but it doesn't mean that what they told you is factual, but this kind of training thing that Niara had is real typical, and that the military on military experiences quite often involve using the abductee to interface with aliens
yeah.
in some way. And I think it, I was explaining this to another case of mine. I had this incredible case, an abductee who's come public.
I tell you what, why don't you save that story when we come right
okay.
back, Melinda, in your website and also Niara's website. They're linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Yeah, I'd love to hear this story of one of your cases. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. If you need to email me, that's george@coasttocoastam.com as well. My travel schedule, the events that I'll be going to are on our website at coasttocoastam.com. Far left-hand corner, it says calendar. That's what you can click. Okay, Melinda, you're talking about a few of your cases. Share them.
Yes, but before I do, your production people are just telling me we were having a lot of clicks and interesting things happening on the line. And I just want to say, of course it could be the weather and just regular technical glitches, possibly. But I'm not surprised.
But you never know.
I'm not surprised given the nature of what Niara was talking about, and coming forward like this on the radio for the first time about her experiences. I'm not surprised. Your show has a history of when people have gotten into some hot topics, this kind of thing happening.
Tell me about it.
This time, who knows? It may not be related, but I just want to say we were having severe technical difficulties, and that's why I'm back on and not Niara. I feel very badly about it. But what I started to say is something I realized regarding this using abductees in these communication with the aliens kind of stuff. Is it made sense in this regard? And I was having a conversation with one of my cases, Nadine Lawlich, who works in the legal profession, mainstream, down-to-earth, credible professional as you could possibly be. She actually joined up with Barbara Lamb and wrote a book called Alien Experiences and hosts a website for that. She now shares her website also with me. So my website is connected through her. So if anyone goes to alienexperiences.com, that's how they get to my website. But we were meeting because she was updating my website and just did extensively. It was great. She added all stuff for me. And but in our talking about that, I was telling her about the military on military cases and stuff. And she is not one of those, but she is someone who is one of those, again, advanced abductees who's had abductions extensively and then had the military reabduction. The covert ops reabduction was taken to an underground base, had that happen a couple of times. An amazing, amazing story and just so credible. But we were talking about this, and I was telling her about how they use the people for this communication thing. And she said, you know what, and she gave me tremendous insight because she said, it makes perfect sense. She says, that is so logical that rather than recruit somebody from covert ops or recruit somebody from their technology department to interface with the aliens, and I'm sure they do, and there's a couple of insiders' accounts and stories relating to this. But if they need someone kind of on the spot, how better, you know, than to use an abductee who they don't, there's no acclimation process to get used to the aliens. There's no training. There's no multiple weeks, months, or even years of an acclimation of a training to communicate with the aliens, of just getting used to their presence. They can, you know, pick up some abductee and plug them right in there. And then if it's a military operation that involves military procedures and knowledge and stuff, how better than to use one of their own? So it just made such logical sense that some of these military-on-military cases would involve these larger programs because they're by-stepping a huge learning curve, a huge acclimation process by using an abductee as opposed to using someone else. And I really think, especially now that I'm talking about this so much on your show, I think I'm really going to get a lot of responses from people who have this type of experience.
The Bud Hopkins, the late John Max, those kinds of folks still involved in this entire situation, are they getting new cases? What's happening on their end?
Well, sure. Abduction hasn't gone away. And there's even, you know, evidence to suggest that alien abduction's on the increase, or that just because of the information's more prevalent on it, more cases come forward. It's definitely a big part of ufology. And sure enough, those researchers are, you know, still working with cases all the time and always have new developments and new information. Unfortunately, John Mack, being no longer with us, that he passed away a number of years ago, is a very unfortunate thing because he was such a tremendous, person of credibility.
One of the best.
Who brought his career to bear on this subject and offered so much to all of us. And I'm very fortunate to say I met him and he became a friend. Some of these major researchers don't have the military cases. I understand that. Some of them only have a few. And some of them, when I talked about the one who had 200 but had 12 cases of reabduction, that's Leo Sprinkle I was talking about, who's another one of the most prominent researchers. And these researchers, these abduction researchers have in the range of, you know, starting at, even some of the more casual researchers have hundreds of cases each, if not like 500, and some of them go up to, you know, Bud and Dave and probably Leo at this point, you know, they're ranging up in like 1,500 cases, you know, each. So it's they're just dealing with huge amounts of people, and there need to be more people in this field, and there are. There are people all over who do this research and people who work with abductees, I actually know of some people who are, I can't talk a lot about it now because it's not functioning yet, but they're putting together a real database, a real place where people can go and not only a network, but an interactive site where they can get information on different researchers and support groups and things in their area. And so people, even in some of the states that right now we're not sure if there's someone researching, we'll find that person, we'll find that hypnotherapist who's either done this or is willing to do it and create a database. And I know some people that are taking that upon themselves. And to some degree, Joe Montado has some of that resource with his ICAR organization, but uh, but these people are going to include them and everyone else, you know, going to try and take it to the next level, which I think is just a really great thing to do.
How are the memories, Melinda, being erased? How's that happening?
Well,
is it hypnosis, something?
Yeah, it's hypnosis and fear and drugs. I think these, for anyone out there that's a mind control researcher, I got into the mind control aspects of this kicking and screaming. I didn't want to, but it came up in the research, and I had to become at least familiar with some basics about it because it was so prevalent in these experiences, these covert ops experiences. And so what it is it appears to be a use of hypnosis, fear, intimidation, and drugs, and some pain inducement sometimes. So when they drug you and use the hypnosis and mind altering drugs, plus if they induce pain, it makes the memory stick. If anyone out there is familiar with the Bob Lazar story, it's one thing he talked about in his experience regarding having to drink this white chalky fluid, and I've had that in some of my cases too that I've heard. And the inducement of some pain and some fear kind of thing. All I can say is they have it down to a science. They have it down to a science. And they've learned how to do it somewhat selectively, so you have this seamless quality. Not always. It's not perfect. Sometimes it's less perfect than others. And these memories can be recovered. A trained hypnotherapist or even an individual with the strong willpower to say, I want to know. And the individual's willpower, some self-hypnosis techniques, certainly meditation techniques can pull this out. And then working with someone who's trained in working with abductees.
Fascinating. Truly is. How about works? More works in the works for you?
Yes, actually. So much going on, so much. As I said, Niara and I are speaking at the International Congress. A book has been out for about 2 years or so, a couple of years now. I was involved in the process of helping to write a book. My name's not on the cover, but that's okay because I'm on every other page inside it, which is fellow researcher Randy Kopang. Randy's last name is Kopang, and you can go to Amazon.com. He wrote the book, and I realized when you introduced me tonight, you said the research of camouflage through limited disclosure, deconstructing a cover-up of the extraterrestrial
presence. That's Randy's work, right?
Exactly. That's the name of his book. So that it's camouflage through limited disclosure, deconstructing a cover-up of the extraterrestrial presence. And you can get it. There's two places they can go online for this. One is Amazon.com. And I believe I know there's a link on the Coast page.
Always. And tell me about Randy Kopang.
Okay. He and I joined up in research years ago because he was researching why there's a cover-up. And he got into that through many different aspects of the UFO subject. And why it remains. Why is there still this policy of non-disclosure? And as he started to write a series and articles and stuff about this, he came across this quote by, I believe by Corso off the top of my head, if I have this right, by Philip Corso, where he said, how we maintain the cover-up all these years is we camouflaged it through limited disclosure. And so that's why he titled his book on that quote. And what the title of the book means is how they've maintained it is exactly that. They have camouflaged it through a slow, limited disclosure process of slowly leaking information out, but that they've always remained in control of that process. And this book, I tell you, if anyone out there wonders why is there a cover-up, why isn't disclosure happening, what are they getting out of it, the technology development, how far back does it go? Really understanding what the problems of that are and how they've maintained it all these years and why they continue to maintain it, please read Randy's book. it's really the definitive explanation. I mean, there's other books that touch upon it, but he really got down to the nitty gritty of it, of why there's a cover up and exactly how they've managed it and maintained it. And it's just very insightful. I'm really proud to have been a part of it.
Well, you've done a great job, Melinda, in your area of expertise as well.
Thank you.
Where does the future go in this kind of research?
Well, that's a good question. You know, certainly more cases, more developments. I mean, as a result of every time I've been on your program, I've gotten more cases. Ray, the case I talked about, was someone who I'd been familiar about before, loosely through someone else. But didn't know really anything about him because of a result of going on coast to coast. He emailed me, and that's how, you know, how I got in touch with him, as well as other cases. I have another new case. This is someone who herself was not in the military, but her family was. And her father had an intelligence-related position, and they moved all over the world. Now, you were talking about, does this happen internationally? They moved all over the world, and she lived on military bases, military and government facilities all over the world, in I don't know, 10 different countries growing up or something. She was an alien abductee, but was also having this covert op stuff starting in her case as a child and continuing into adulthood now. But it started while she was living on these bases. So she was having military reabductions while living on a military base, but she herself was not in the military. But in a couple of the incidences, she saw her father and her mother and stuff involved. So in the case here, we have a generational MILAT case, and obvious easy access to her as an abductee in that she's living in these military facilities, but she had it all over the world. And sometimes it always involved American military, because that's who she was, you know, housed with and stuff. But occasionally it also involved the military of whatever location she was in. And her story about these different locations and having stuff happen is just fascinating. And it literally, you know, followed her from base to base. It's really, and that's another thing I want to say. My cases of people that have had this happen, these individuals like Niara, you know, are so credible. I mean, these people have careers. Like you said, you said a comment earlier, and I wanted to offer something on that about the intelligence and that they have degrees. The people who've had these MILAT cases, like Joe says, advanced abductees, and he's quick to say it doesn't mean there's anything special. I might say maybe there's something that's kind of special. A lot of these people they've accelerated in life. You know, they have.
Well, they've got more. They've got a little more at risk, I think.
What?
They have a little more at risk.
Yes, yes, and it just seems that, I'm going to say I'm blessed by the types of cases I'm getting. On one hand, that, you know, that feels funny to say that because I wouldn't wish this on anyone, and these people have been through, you know, hell and back for sure. But as far as the quality of those cases.
Here's a case in point, and it sets the tone for what you're saying, Melinda. Mm-hmm. And that is, a guy can come out of a bar and say he saw a UFO, mm-hmm. or a police officer can say he saw a UFO.
Yes.
And 99.99% of the time, people will believe the police officer,
yes.
than the guy who came out of the bar. It's perception.
Well, and it's funny you should bring that up. One of my MILAT cases, I don't have his permission to go into detail about this, but I'll say this much. He was a sheriff that I'm not sure exactly what the title was, but he was like the head sheriff of a county,
mm-hmm.
like the head sheriff in whatever that position is called.
In some state. What's
of a county and of a large county.
In a state.
What?
In a state.
In a state. I'll say within California, of a large county within California, like the head sheriff. And this is one of my MILAT cases. He's the case, and I actually have pictures on my website, that he had an experience where he...
pictures of what, him?
Well, no, I'm about to say, I'll
if you got pictures on your website, tell us who he is.
This picture is of a boot print on a wall. And then I also have a scar and a needle mark thing that are both from him. It's not labeled that way, but some of those evidence pictures of of scoop mark and needle marks and stuff. A few of them are his, but and that's actually from his alien abduction. But the boot print one happened this way. He's staying at his brother's at the time. I don't know if he was living there at the time or visiting. I think he was visiting. He's at his brother's house. His brother watches TV. They're going to plan to go out somewhere or something. So he goes to get in the shower. And he, you know, gets in the shower, right. Takes a shower, gets out, comes out of the bathroom with a towel wrapped around him. That's all. As he comes into, you know, opens the bathroom door into a hallway with the towel wrapped around, is greeted by two guys in camouflage uniform, you know, typical military, military camouflage, and two big guys. And they proceed, and he's thinking there was maybe something put over his nose, if I remember correctly, like a chloroform thing or, you know, something like that. But he does this, and apparently there's a bit of a ruckus. His brother, who's in the living room watching TV, hears this, runs into the hallway because he hears his brother fighting with someone, runs into the hallway and sees these guys with his brother and goes, "Why are you guys here? What the hell's going on?" You know, like this. But he remembers one of the guys leaning up against the wall. Next thing they know is the guy who had the experience is drugged, is taken somewhere, is taken into an underground base. The brother, about 2 or 3 hours later, I think it's like 3 hours later, so anyway, period of time, wakes up sprawled out, like spread eagle on his back on the master bed, like waking up like coming off a drug. And his brother's gone. His brother is gone. Later that night, if I remember correctly, the guy who was taken shows up in, I believe, in the patio.
Amazing.
It's left in the patio, knocking on the window for his brother to lock, knocking on a sliding glass door that was locked, if I'm remembering correctly, because I haven't looked at this case in a long time, but knocks on the window trying to get in. And the brother said, "I saw these guys. Where did they take you?" You know, but the brother said, "They drugged me, and about 2 hours later, I woke up spread out.
He didn't even know where he went.
But he said, "I saw them in the hallway," and so the brother who witnessed it takes the other guy and shows him where stuff was, and there on the wall where he remembers one of the guys leaning and putting his boot up on the wall, there's the print of the boot.
There's the same print. Stay with us. We're going to take phone calls with Melinda Leslie when we come back, and perhaps also your stories if you've been abducted. And Melinda, before we go to calls, tell me a little bit about the Orange County Paranormal Researchers Group.
Ah, oh my.
That was a devious laugh.
Well, as you may remember, in the past I've handed you a DVD of some EVP.
Yes.
Or not DVD, a CD of EVP. And but that was achieved with that group. I am part of a paranormal investigation group that we've been doing stuff because we started investigating UFO stuff together as a group of people roughly 20 years ago, just over 20 years ago. But about 10 years ago, an opportunity came up to look into one of the people who was part of our abduction research group. I mean, not abduction, UFO investigation group. He had a coworker that believed they had a haunted trailer, that they had a home, but in their backyard they had a mobile home, you know, mm-hmm. a trailer, an addition in the back, and they were having all sorts of very strange and, you know, paranormal things happen there. And we said, well, gee, we've never really done ghosts before, but we took it on. And actually, I think it might be like 12 years ago now. It's been at least 10, maybe 12. I'd have to ask the guys. But that was our first ghost investigation, and we've been doing it ever since. We've done historical sites. We've been requested to do a lot of homes. We've got all the variety of evidence that you see on all those TV shows. But predominantly, what we seem to have a real, you know, just a knack for is getting EVP, electronic voice phenomena. And we've recorded, oh, gosh, I've lost count. I'm thinking over 400 EVP now.
That's amazing.
We have we clearly have about really over 300, if not 400, Class A. We get so much now that we don't even – Class A, B, C is just something in that research field that basically means, you know, a C means you need to use equipment or something to enhance it to be able to hear. A B means it's open to interpretation. It can sometimes sound, you know, garbled. It's either fast or slow. Or Bs you can hear, but they're just usually very whispery. As are the things that when you play them for someone, they can hear them. It's clear that it's English. It's clear that, you know, I mean, a Class A just means you hear it and it sounds like someone talking. And so we used to get, you know, Cs and Bs. We still do, but when we do our analysis, it's like we don't even count those anymore. You know, we don't even upload them to the computer from our recording equipment anymore because we get so many Class A's. We've gotten some very good things. For instance, we've done the Queen Mary a number of times, and just at the Queen Mary, we've gotten.
I love that show.
I know. I love it too. I love it. We love it. We've done it a whole number of times now, and we've just recorded some really outstanding Class A EVP. I'll give just one example, so you know, not to spend too long on the subject, but one of them, as an example, was. Where there's a first-class swimming pool that if you go on the tour, you see it's not generally open to the public, but if you go on the tour, you see, and it's empty because it's cracked and damaged, doesn't hold water anymore, but it used to be the first-class swimming pool. And behind there are some changing rooms, and lots of investigation groups have gone in there, and there's a lot of activity reported in the first-class swimming pool and in the changing rooms. In the changing rooms, as an example, we got one EVP, that's myself and two other investigators. We realized above the changing rooms, which are just these tiled, you know, kind of like stalls that maybe used to have a curtain that went across them or something. Now they're just like tiled outlets, you know. And above them is this light box with a red and green light on it. They're not lit up. You can tell from the plastic that covers the light that one's red, one's green. And it probably either signifies there's something wrong with the temperature of the water or to get an attendant. I think probably to call an attendant or something. And I'm looking up at them saying, gee, I wonder what those lights were for. I wonder if they were to call an attendant. And right then, this voice, and I'm with two guys, so it's clearly not the three of us, this voice that's like louder than the three of us, and we're talking right there, but louder than us, is this voice says, this very clearly says, the shower is too cold. So that's either, you know, you might have heard of residual or intelligent hauntings. These are two terms used in the field. Residual means that this could be left over. So I don't know if we're hearing a residual, like that was said in the past, and we're just picking it up, maybe. But it seemed to be intelligent. I think it was an intelligent one because I think we were talking about the lights. We were talking about what would it mean if the lights were on, and some entity was telling us the shower is too cold. That's what it means, you know, or was just complaining to us in the moment. But, you know, there may have been some lapse, some time warp or something where it's from the past it's complaining to us and we're hearing it now. I mean, it's open to interpretation, but regardless, it was very loud, very clear. And anyway, so that's what I do with those guys. We have a good time. You know, it's funny. Ghost hunting is much like sky watching with UFOs. You can go, you know, you go out to Area 51, you sit out there all night in Sage Lounge, freezing cold, staring up at the sky, hoping to see something. You can go out there 10 times and see something once, and you've literally laid on your back looking at the sky for 8 hours straight, you know, and I've done that a bunch of times. And ghost hunting's the same way. You go in, you spend a bunch of time, you're talking to thin air, trying to get a response, you know, but
you've got to wait. You've got to wait.
That's right. And it's all about the review. You know, a lot of people want to go on a ghost hunt. It's like, no. Going there and doing it's not the important part. The important part is the hours and hours it takes to review the data. If you go and you film a four-hour investigation, it's going to take you at least 12 hours minimum to review that footage. You know, and that's where the real work comes in. A lot of people want to go have fun, but they don't want to do that real work. The real work is reviewing the evidence and finding the evidence. Same with the UFO subject and with the abduction subject. It's about the evidence. It's about gathering the evidence, reviewing it, doing the analysis. And that part's not exciting, but that's what it's really about.
All right, let's go to some of the calls. We'll pick it up by going to Susan in New York on the wild card line. Hey, Susan, whereabouts in New York are you?
In Queens.
Queens. Yes. Listening to us on WABC. Go ahead, Susan.
Yes. Hi, yes. I guess, I don't know if it's really considered abduction, but I have had visitations sexually from, and I know I've been impregnated by aliens. And
Did you have missing fetus?
Yes, I've had fetuses, and I believe they've come to visit me, so that might be...
I mean, like, did you go to a doctor and find out you were pregnant?
No, they did not let me keep them. They took them, and I've had...
But were you... But I mean, no.
Did you have verification?
Did you have verification that you were pregnant?
No, not physical ones. No.
Okay.
I've actually had implants removed from me without surgery, and because they actually track me and know how to come get me when they want more. You know, to do stuff with me. I know that you guys don't have, I can't prove it, any of that, but I've had abduction barcodes removed from me, so now I don't get those visitations anymore.
Well, it sounds, you know, without knowing a lot about your case, it certainly sounds possible that you're having alien abduction.
Well, we've heard these before, Mom.
Yeah, that's
so
right.
They do exactly. Happen.
What she's sharing is common in the experience. I recommend in her case, and this is if anyone else out there is listening and wonders, has this happened to me? I've had some stuff. Regarding the alien abduction, again, on Nadine's site, alienexperiences.com, which you can get to my site from there. On her site, there's this list of 65, I think it's 65, I'm pretty sure, indicators for abductions, broken down into the various categories. But you go through there and see how many of those things apply to you. If you answer yes to a significant number, like, you know, more than half of what's on there, especially if you get quite high, like over 50, you know, of the things on there, that's highly suggestive. Again, it's not absolute evidence, but it's highly suggestive and very probable you've had the experience. And then if you do look at that list and you answer a yes to a bunch of them, through Nadine's site or through Joe Montalto's site, you can find other, you know, resources. And in Nadine's book, there's resources that can get you to, you know, to a support group, which is so important, as we were talking earlier about how hard it is to have this experience and how hard it is to live with it. It is so important not only to work with a therapist, do your own work to recover memories, work with a therapist to assist in the recovering of the memories, plus once you started to remember, then get in a support group, be with other people you can talk to who've been through the same thing, where you can feel that you're in a safe, comfortable environment, and you don't feel like you're so alone out there. Anyways, but that's what I recommend to her. It certainly sounds possible.
Okay, let's go to Richmond in British Columbia, Canada. Chad, you're up with us. Hi, Chad.
Hey, how you doing, George?
Great, Chad.
Melinda, I had a question for you. In any of your cases, have the abductees ever had strange scars? They're either very prevalent or very fine that they remember, or at any point in their life, do they ever remember having, like, weird stuff stuck in their hand that disappears that remember?
Well, yeah, just to add real quick, that's all very typical evidence for an alien abduction experience. Scars that appear overnight, scars with no explanation. Often these are scoop marks. They're often triangular patterns, or there are a series of smaller marks in a triangular pattern. There's a whole variety of stuff. Again, I have a couple samples, not a lot, a couple samples of photos on my website, but those are all very common.
Okay, thank you.
All right.
Was that enough of an answer to your question?
I'm sure it was, Melinda. I'm sure it was. Let's go to Los Angeles. Hello, Lisa, you're up with us.
Hi.
Hey, how are you?
Okay, Melinda, do you recognize this voice?
It's Sylvia Brown. No,
yeah,
I'm kidding.
No, yeah, it does sound like.
This is Lisa.
And who is this?
Lisa.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes.
I'm so glad
cases.
You got through.
Yeah, one of your cases.
Yes, that's absolutely. My God, it has been a long time, my friend.
Oh, well, I've been undercover for 8 years.
Yes.
Ever
well,
since
yeah,
the military
you know,
got me.
You're on coast. What? How much you want to come out with is up to you. Everyone, this is just one of my star cases.
Another one.
One
huh?
of my early ones that I did so much with. And to the degree she wants to say anything about her experience, I'll leave up to
Lisa,
her.
Lisa, you made the call. What happened to you?
Well, I've been a lifelong abductee, and we can take it back to the Nazis in our family.
Mm-hmm.
And there's military involvement. And I found out that my father did government work.
Mm-hmm.
And 1992, the military came and snagged me out of my bed in the middle of the night and took me to a facility where, hold on, I need a sip of water.
Sure. All right, go get a sip of water.
Are you still on?
Yeah, she's here.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, I'm still here.
Okay, can I say something now that obviously you're going very public
so
right
you,
now?
So you know some of this, Melinda.
Yeah, yeah.
So fill in the gaps here.
Can I bring up what I mentioned earlier?
Misha?
Yeah. Okay. When I talked about an experience where someone was threatened about her children being killed.
This is the
this
one.
This is the person.
All right.
And her and I had an experience where we were taken together from her apartment.
Mm-hmm. Anyway.
So they take you.
This is her.
And do they erase your memory on this?
Well, they use drugs, they use pain, they use electricity, they beat the hell out of me. They threatened me, and I haven't recovered from it, and that's why I'm calling.
Wow. I am so glad to hear from you again. And
I need help.
You know, and I know you were talking to Marina, but you know, let's get together. Don't tell me where you live other than are you in California or Nevada?
Oh, I'm still in California.
Well, shoot, girl, let's get together.
I'm still in the same house. My phone number is the same. I do not trust email.
Okay.
Here's a true story. Leah Haley and I, as you know, are very good friends.
Yes, I do. I know that.
Okay. I received an email from her about 2 years ago that told me that she wanted nothing more to do with me.
Oh, gosh.
She didn't want to hear from me, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Okay. Well, Misha, let's talk privately about that. Let's talk privately about that.
Okay, and you know how to get a hold of her, Melinda.
Yeah, but honey, I definitely want to talk to you. I want to help you. I'm so glad to hear from you again. I'll say this for, I guess, if she's still on. But she had such significant harassment and threats on her life and stuff. Besides what the threats about her kids, but some attempts on her life, quite frankly, and some rather frightening experiences that caused her, for her own safety and her family's safety, to pull out of the field for how many years has it been?
Well, what was so unusual, Melinda, about her abduction case?
She just had a bunch of it, had so much of I don't want to go into great detail. Do you want to say anything about
that? No, go ahead,
that?
Melinda.
Okay. Is she still on?
No, go ahead.
Oh, okay. I don't want her to get upset with me, but
don't forget, she called here.
Okay, I know. Yes, she did, but I don't have her permission to say this, and I'm careful that with my cases. I only say the stuff I know I have permission to do so, or at least I try. In her case, there's reason to believe, because of her family's background, that there may have been further, I'll just say, mind control-related things going back in her past. And I think that is why there was a harder attempt to her to keep her from looking at those memories.
It sounds like her entire family has been abducted for years.
Well, or that there's mind control stuff going back in her family, without a doubt. And that's more like the standard, you know, mind control stuff unrelated to the subject. But because of that, I think is, and she may differ with me, but I think that's maybe why she had it worse, and they really wanted her to not look at the subject. Her and I had harassment and threats and stuff together. And
what do you
separately.
Mean together? You were in the same room
We had an experience where we were taken together, and then we had some subsequent stuff happen to us together. And my stuff was rather minor. Hers escalated into really extreme stuff. Without her permission, I don't go into detail, but it got extreme. There were attempts on her life. And I'm so glad to hear her call. I hope she doesn't mind my saying this, but she'll contact me, I'm sure, and I'll call her. And
she sounds like she needs help.
I'll help her because I know for her safety she pulled out, and that she came forward right now is mind blowing, and I'm so grateful. And honey, I'm here for you completely, and I always have been.
It's so bizarre to think that this is going on, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, if you're just on the outside looking in and you hear these stories, this isn't going on.
I know. And it sounds like it isn't, but it it's part of the complexity of this subject. It has everything to do with why there's still a cover-up, why there's disclosure hasn't happened. It's related to it. The whole alien abduction subject is so problematic for disclosure, and it's part and parcel. You know, I've even realized separately, I can't go into any detail whatsoever, but I have been in conversation with Don Schmidt on a Roswell-related thing. I think I mentioned it last time I was
there. Yeah.
And that's as much as I can say until we've done further investigation. But in doing so and rereading his brilliant, him and Tom Carey's brilliant book, Witness to Roswell, in rereading that and realizing that when I read that, I was like, you know, this is exactly what happens in the MyLab cases. In other words, the harassment of witnesses, the harassment, surveillance, intimidation of witnesses goes back part and parcel with the entire UFO subject from the beginning.
Well, it's truly amazing, Melinda. It truly is. Hey, we're going to come back and take some final phone calls with you in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Melinda's website linked up right now, thecoasttocoastam.com. And back with your calls with Melinda Leslie, and let's pick it up by going to Salt Lake City, Utah. It's Maggie's turn, west of the Rockies. Hello, Maggie.
Hello, George, and hello, Melinda.
Hi.
Hi. I'm another person who child was abducted, only I do have proof from a doctor.
Missing fetus?
Yes.
Oh.
In fact, maybe more than one, but the one I'm talking about was I had a fallopian tube pregnancy. 8 weeks later, I knew I was pregnant again. The doctor said, that's just kind of impossible, though he had repaired my fallopian tube and said, you know, it's perfect, you're fine.
Mm-hmm.
But they did a quantitative blood test, you know, measuring hormones,
mm-hmm.
and I was indeed pregnant again. But the hormones kept going down, so he was afraid it might be another fallopian tube pregnancy. We went in, and he said there was absolutely no fetal material, but the fallopian tube had been massacred. He said, I've never seen anything like it in my whole life.
Mm.
And he knew before it was fine because he had worked on it.
He had worked on it himself, and he's one of the best surgeons and GYNs.
What,
in Salt Lake.
What did he try to, you know, say or imply?
Well, he thought
there's
a certain type of cancer that, you know, can make a woman, you know, give false pregnancy tests. So
yeah.
He gave me all those tests, which I did not have.
Mm-hmm.
He has no idea what happened to any of the fetal material.
Wow.
And I would say about 8 years after that, I was at my parents' house in Arizona. I heard something jump over a fence. I have a picture. I had Polaroid cameras then when you could get the film. I took a photo. It woke me up, and I have a picture of a human child inside like a spacesuit.
With a spacesuit on?
A spacesuit on.
Describe
I'm trying
what you mean.
It's almost like one of those old round ones that you see in the old diving suit.
Sure.
But I have it, and I haven't. I thought about sending it to Lex, but I thought this may be my child because when you look inside, you can see a human face.
This is weird.
With blonde hair.
You send him the picture and a description, and send one to Melinda as well.
Yeah. I'll send
my
website
send
is my
you,
email.
Okay? A better
send,
one.
Send me one. I'd like to see.
Okay, because I just had a feeling that was my son, and his little hand. The hand was reaching out to me.
All right, let's do that. If you would, send it our way.
Wow. You at other times?
Our website, hold on, Melinda. Our website is coasttocoastam.com, and you can email Lex at coasttocoastam.com. What's your email, Melinda?
George, I'm sorry I cut you off. Mine, of course, I'm on
never,
the Coast site.
Never
I can
cut
do
me off.
That
Melinda.
Way, or through alienexperiences.com.
Okay. Next up, we go to Robert in Wilmington, Delaware, east of the Rockies. Hi, Robert.
Hey, George, how you doing?
Okay.
Melinda, I guess just two quick questions. Is the only reason of the abducting, is it for reproducing? Is that the only reason?
With the aliens? No.
Yes.
No, God, no. No, not at all. In fact, granted, very big in the research as far as the number of cases, and people can have a variety of things happen, but there are consistent reports. of people have of men and women having eggs and sperm taken, and then the production of hybrid children, and then the abductees being presented the children, everything from newborn babies they're asked to hold, or that they, you know, view in some container, some holder, or they're asked to hold them, toddlers they're asked to hold, all the way up to, you know, from children to older kids to, you know, preteen to teens to adults. And so even now we have lots of reports of people seeing hybrid adults that they believe are their kids grown up. But that's not it by any means. Yes, that's a big deal, and it's a big part of it, this production of hybrids thing, but it's not the only part. Many abductees are shown earth changes. They have psi testing. They have development of psi skills, you know, psychic intuitive skills kind of thing, where there's games and testing of that, or development and teaching of that. Many abductees are shown the destruction of Earth, whether they're being told of a future scenario or the aliens are just looking at how the abductee reacts to seeing such a scene. But these kinds of things, a lot of abductees are shown technology. I mean, if you're an abductee who's had all these kinds of experiences and you've been shown a lot of technology, if you've been shown the technology and the propulsion and the navigation of the ship and had those kinds of things explained to you, you're very likely also going to have the MyLab experience, because the government covert ops guys doing this are really interested in people who've seen and had any, you know, education on the technology.
And do you know what the planets that they're coming from? Are there names for them?
No. This is one thing consistent in the subject. Some abductees have speculated, okay, so there's lots of speculation, but no definitive evidence of any kind as far as exactly where these things are from. There have been a few reports here and there. I think of Betty and Barney Hill and the Zeta Reticuli system and Zeta 1 and Zeta 2 and those kind of things. But those kinds of reports where an abductee feels they were provided any knowledge are extremely rare, as far as like what planet kind of knowledge is rare. And it's kind of all over the place. And again, you know, an alien telling you what planet doesn't mean it. So at least with the technology, if they show you the technology and you operate it and they say, now do it, and you're able to duplicate what they just had you do, at least you can say you had hands-on, you saw the technology. It's one thing, though, just to be told something. So what you experience and what you have hands-on with the ship is one thing. What the aliens tell you, abduction research has learned you got to take with a grain of salt. It may be the God's honest truth. It may not be, you know, and there's no way to verify. So that's kind of it. It's like, and that's why I talked earlier about the evidence. It's about the evidence for these experiences where the verification process comes in. And then the experience itself is really only important to the person having the experience. In other words, to the abductee, the experience is important. And sure, we all like to hear the interesting stories, but it's really the evidence that's important.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, next up, we move on to Illinois. Hello, Tina. It's your turn on Coast to Coast.
Hi, guys.
Hi.
Thanks. I want to know how I can really get a hold of a good investigator. This is a generational thing. My dad was in the Army Air Force and I in New Mexico after the war. And then when I was a child, he was killed in a plane crash. He and my mother, they took off from a government airport out there in California. But when I was a child then at 8 years old, I had a daylight sighting where I went out to feed the dog, and there was this gold craft over my head about 20 feet, and there were lights all around it, but they weren't on. And, of course, the dog was nowhere. But I've had trouble also with the black helicopters in the last year or so, and my son has too. And he also did go into the Navy and had to work on an aircraft carrier, and he's had missing time.
Oh, goodness.
And I have the 11/11 phenomenon all the time. The helicopter in town was really bizarre because I was driving him to summer class where I went, you know, every day. And there was this helicopter just, like, turned around and about 20 feet ahead above us in the middle of town. And we could see the guy had mousy hair and the headphones on and everything. And then I've had more black helicopters this year. I'll go out in the yard, and they're they'll go around the house twice or something. There's no markings. They're totally black. They're not the, you know, government ones or not.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like I have so much to contribute, and I tried a few years ago to try MUFON and that sort of route, and I really think I have, so it's so detailed that I really need, I think I have a lot to contribute, and they didn't even, I don't think they can do that. I don't think they can help me in that way, and I'm not a group person to begin with anyway.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's like one time I tried to report a UFO that we thought could be one, and the guy was trying to convince me it was a star. And I know what I'm talking about. I've had, you know, experiences since then. I have.
Were you saying that was someone from MUFON that did that?
This was a report on this one, but the MUFON one, just they were too far away. They just wanted me to go.
What state are you in?
I am in Illinois, and I'd rather talk. I tried to go the MUFON route. I've tried to go that, and I still feel.
Okay, because that's what I was going to recommend. Because do you feel that there's, or do you have reason to feel, or are you suspicious that there's abduction stuff too, or do you think the black helicopters are because of your sightings and your sighting reporting?
I really do believe the helicopters, have something to do with it.
I know, but the black helicopters, is that because of the sightings, or do you also have reason to believe you've had an abduction account?
I have both.
Okay.
And even that day, there was with the helicopter, there was this real short chemtrail and a shadow. There was a phenomenon in the sky that day, and I'm not crazy. My son was with me.
It's not coming to mind to me right away who's in Illinois. I recommend there's three things I'm going to recommend.
Okay.
Do try to contact your local MUFON again.
And you can get that by going to the national, right?
Yes, going to the MUFON international site, and they have it broken down who's where.
No, I understand that.
Let me go on. That's one. Number two is contact ICAR.
Okay.
Which is Joe Mantal's organization. The website is icar1.com.
Okay,
and I recommend that because they may have someone in your area, so that's one thing, too.
Yeah,
and
I
the other thing is, because
too,
I would like to hear more about your the helicopter stuff in relationship to your abduction stuff, because that's specifically related to my research, is email me.
Okay, I will do that, because I have evidence. I've scoop marks. I had a nasal.
Yeah, email me, too. I'd like to talk to you. So.
Okay, well, I appreciate it so much. It makes me feel better. And it's just, you know, you're kind of apprehensive. I'm scared of, I don't want to trust certain people.
I really understand. I know. Hey, you know, this may seem like I'm doing this so easy to be on, even on, you know, coast here with George. And I tell you, it is really hard. The thought that I have family members that don't know this about me, and I'm always scared to death, what are they going to say? I mean, I accept the responsibility of going public, but that doesn't mean I don't have thoughts about it. And I'm out there job hunting right now. Could my doing this on the radio affect my employment? I mean, it's just, I know how hard it is, and I so understand, and I appreciate you calling in, and, you know, definitely email me.
Okay, very good. Let's go next to Greg in Mississippi, first-time caller. Go ahead, Greg.
Yes, I know you're running out of time. Melinda, I want to tell you a quick story. I'm an abductee.
Yeah.
I met a man where I live here who is former military.
Mm-hmm.
I found out he was the government's Army's chief psychologist during Vietnam, and he was directly involved with MKUltra. He told me that he did train assassins for the CIA.
Wow.
Well, I found out through a mutual friend that he has clearance for UFO activity. And I called him on the phone, told him who it was. He said, well, the first thing he says, we don't need to be talking about this over the phone.
Yeah.
He said, I'll meet you for lunch. He said, we'll toss a few ideas around. Well, I sat there and talked about 5 or 10 minutes while he ate his lunch. And all of a sudden, he put his fork down, looked me dead in the eyes. He said, it's not you they're worried about. Well, he's a master. He's a psychologist.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a hypnotist.
Mm-hmm.
He's got a double master's degree from Duke University. He ain't no, I mean, he's tall cotton.
Yeah.
Well, he wanted to hypnotize me. He wanted to know what I knew.
Yeah.
But he tricked me, and I let him do it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, get this. 2 days later, I woke up in my bedroom at 3:00 in the morning. He was standing in my bedroom.
2 days later?
After the hypnosis session.
Wow.
Like, you went into hypnosis, and 2 days later, you're waking up in your bedroom with him standing there.
Well, I don't know. I don't understand that. But Nick standing next to him was a little 3.5-foot creature, and he was holding his hand. I saw them.
Oh,
I saw him. He was in he had a silhouette. He was not in physical form, but he had a hat on that he always wore. It was him. I saw it.
Yeah.
The next thing, I woke up the next morning to go to work, my left earlobe was bloodied over.
Okay. Definitely email me. I definitely want to talk to you further. When you email me, email your phone number so we can talk. I'd like to know more about this. I want to say to everyone out there, as extreme as that sounds, that's all real typical, the kind of stuff I get.
Look how many people this is happening to.
I know. It's just, it's on one hand I go, oh, another case, more research, and the other part of me goes, oh, no, another case.
Is John Carpenter back in the business doing this? I think he is.
Yes, he is, and he was one of the early therapists
working with
people who've had the military involvement stuff,
yep.
And he was the person that helped Lee Haley so much and a number of other people. Yes, he's a great guy, and I believe he's still out there doing it.
Out of Springfield, Missouri.
Uh-huh.
Carson, California, quick one here. Andre, go ahead.
How you doing, George?
Good,
how
Andre.
You doing, Melinda?
Great.
I love the show. I feel it's very informative, and you're empowering people with this knowledge.
Thanks.
Well, thank you.
My story began in 2008. I had a sighting here two blocks away from where I live. I went to go visit a friend, and shortly after we got out of the car, we seen a light just coming down, and it was about a mile above us. And it was kind of coming down, and then it just suddenly stopped. And then it disappeared for a few seconds, and everybody around me was, they were kind of tripping out, never seen anything like this before. And then all of a sudden, a light appeared, and another light appeared, and then another light appeared, and it created a triangle. And then it turned into a smaller light, and it disappeared. This was my very first sighting.
Mm-hmm.
I've never had one before. I was actually a non-believer, and up until this day. And a few months ago, I had another sighting where I live, and I saw the same exact thing. And ever since that last sighting I had, I haven't been able to sleep. It's not like I've been thinking about it, but I haven't been able to sleep, and I feel like I have this advanced consciousness. It's given me some kind of feeling or awareness where I'm feeling things, and I'm having these vivid dreams and deja vus. And I was just really compelled to call in today because I've never felt like that before, and I was hearing callers about abductions.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to know if maybe I may have had an abduction, and I just don't know.
Sounds like it. Melinda, a minute to go. What do you think?
Yeah, possibly. Granted, there could be other explanations for what you're feeling. Again, I recommend that you go to alienexperiences.com and look at that list of traits. Like I said, it's over 65 traits for abduction, and I think that'll really help you out.
Absolutely. Melinda, thank you so much. What's the latest thing you're working on real quickly?
Okay, well, I am speaking at the International UFO Congress in Laughlin, Nevada. So please, at the end of February, Niara and I are doing a presentation together. And by the way, I hope she's still listening, Niara. I feel so bad about the phone problems. I really wanted people to hear your whole story. I'm not surprised we had phone problems, but I feel very badly about it. I really wanted, and anyone out there who's friends of her who wanted to hear her, I'm very sorry. Additionally, I also have lecture notes I've put together.
All right, and the best thing to go, Melinda, is to go to your website, which is linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Thanks again, Melinda. Up next, Joshua P. Warren and his paranormal moment.